Blue Wire.
Cousins, Thielen, he's got it!
Garoppolo over the middle,
intercepted, Harrison Smith.
It's caught! It's Kyle Rudolph with a Viking touchdown!
Welcome in, everybody. Welcome to Bleeding Purple, a podcast about the Minnesota Vikings. We are part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, and we are brought to you by BetOnline.ag. I am your host, Adam Patrick, from TheVikingAge.com. As always, I am joined by Eric Strack from MinnesotaSportsFan.com. And on this episode, former Vikings wide receiver Matthew Hatchett was kind enough to join us for a discussion. We talked about a lot of different things, and I hope you will enjoy the conversation that, you know, he had with myself and Eric. But before we get to that, I just wanted to let everyone know where to find us online in case you're new to the show. Go to Twitter and you can follow us at Bleeding Podcast. You know, subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, we're on there. And, you know, do us a favor and leave us a rating and a review. That's all we want. We want to get feedback to, you know, make the best Vikings podcast we can for you guys to listen to. So just go to Apple or wherever you leave a review for a podcast and let us know what you think about our show. But, you know, without further ado, let's just get right into the interview with former Vikings wide receiver Matthew Hatchett.
First down at the 20-yard line for the Vikings, who trail 10-7. Jeff George with a long drop and the pass right on the money to Matthew Hatchett, and he's going to score. No flags down. An 80-yard touchdown pass for a score to Matthew Hatchett.
That didn't take long, did it?
All right, joining us now is someone who is a former wide receiver for the Vikings, who was the original number 19 before Adam Thielen took it over to honor him. Please welcome Mr. Matthew Hatchett to the show. Welcome.
Oh, man, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Yeah, I tweeted the other day about that 19 and how Adam made it popular and sexy, and I couldn't do the same with it, so I apologize.
how did you end up with that number? It was in your rookie year, right? The preseason?
Yeah.
They just gave it to you?
Well, actually, at the time, my college number was 19. Okay. And I wore my college number 19 because, like, one of my best friends, Ahmad Wells, his name was Bree, he was a class behind me, and he had got hurt in high school, and he couldn't play that once his that season. And so I started wearing 19 in college. And then when I got to the league, this is how old I am, I guess I'm dating myself. So you had to have an 80s number as a receiver. You couldn't wear, you know, a teen or single digit unless all the 80s numbers were taken.
I was going to say, what about Keyshawn?
Well, again, lucky for me, all the 80s numbers were taken. Uh-huh. And then when one comes open, you have to fill that number. Uh-huh. So in 89, I think somebody had got cut who was 89. So then I took over 89. But if all the numbers are taken, then you can wear a team number. So that was an NFL rule across on every team. So basically, yeah, they had all their 80s numbers taken. So he got to stay in 19.
Yeah, not anymore, interesting, though.
Now it's all open. Yep, now it's it's wide open.
Is it really wide open now? Can you pick whatever, no matter what position, you can pick wherever you want?
No, the linemen still have to be 50, okay, yeah. 79. 60, I don't think you can do single digits as a receiver. I think it still has to be two digits. Yeah. It can just be a teen number or an 80s number, but you can't do a 90s number.
Makes sense, because I feel like we'd see single digits all over the place, especially kids coming out of college.
You'd see that number one and number zero everywhere. It was a good number to me, so I'm not complaining at all.
Great.
So Matt, you played for the Vikings from 97 to 2000. Mm-hmm. What sticks out most about your time in Minnesota? I'm sure this is one of those generic questions that you get on the regular, but what sticks out about Minnesota in your time here?
Well, no, I think, of course, it was probably that 98 season. It's you have Hall of Famers across the board at every single position. And, we set every offensive record known to man at the time in the NFL. And, nobody had seen an offense like that, ever. So for us to be at the top of our offensive game and how just everything was coming together as far as the team and the city and, Denny Green, it's just like it was a great time, not just for the Vikings, but in my life in general. That 98 season was pretty special. That's probably the number one thing. And of course we didn't end it how we wanted to, of course, but at the end of the day, except we learned a lot from the season and kind of learned that's kind of like the, your life, just cause you're up and you're supposed to win doesn't mean you're going to win. You got to continue to put in the work and continue to focus. And we just didn't finish that game. It's like, and again, it's a whole metaphor of life. You got to finish. And you could be up one week, and the next week you're home and watching somebody else play. That 98 season taught me a lot, but I cherish it to this moment.
Yeah, with that 98 season, there's always the what if you guys would have actually won. Yeah. This question has probably been asked to pretty much everyone on that team. Do you think you would have won the Super Bowl if you beat them?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. We were kind of already making plans too. I think we would have blew Denver out. They just didn't have enough firepower for us. Honestly. Good team, but I think they wouldn't have been able to score with us. And it was our MO all season. If we get up early, it's a wrap. We get up 21-3 in the first quarter, or 28-10 in the first half. We just continue to pour it on.
So did it kind of feel like going, so kind of off that question, did it kind of feel like going into that game against Atlanta, did it feel, were you guys kind of carrying the mentality where if we win this game, we're Super Bowl champions? Like, you felt like the winner of the NFC was taking, obviously you have another game to play. The Super Bowl is nothing to joke around about, but did you feel like the Atlanta was your toughest competition left at that point?
We felt whoever wins the NFC is going to win the Super Bowl. Again, we had seen a lot of tape on Denver that year. For some odd reason, I think they're probably playing one divisional foe or something like that. So we should see some tape on Denver. And again, they had good, great run game, legendary quarterback and all that. But but they couldn't stick with us on offense. Like, they couldn't score with us. They would have had to score.
And nobody could. Well, not very many.
Right. So their defense was not great at the time. And again, I think we would have took advantage of them. But I think that would have started a run, honestly. I think we probably would have won maybe two out of the next 3 years or something like that.
Oh, stop.
This is
terrible.
That's kind of how it goes,
This is turning into very sad.
But I mean, it is what it is, and when it's not. Yeah. The thing is, we would beat that team 9 out of 10 times for sure. And it's just that one time. Fate was not on our side that one time.
You got out of Minnesota before Dennis Green was fired in 2001, but. Still in the league, but do you think maybe the Vikings, you were there, you were with Dennis Green the whole time you were in Minnesota. Do you think the Vikings made a mistake when they fired Dennis Green in 2001?
Absolutely. I mean, Dennis Green was the best NFL coach I've ever had, for me personally, probably, top five people I've ever met in my life personally. And I just, it's hard for people to look at, people in the profession as something else. They look at him as a coach. So it just goes by your win losses and that's it. What are you doing to help these men become, better people, like better husbands, better brothers, better sisters. And I think Denny Green stressed that more than what people give him credit for. And that's what made us a good team. The X's and O's are always going to be, that we're running a 12-yard curl since like 1920. So we had the same 12-yard curl in our system. X and O is going to be one thing, but who can lead men? Who can have you believe in you like you've never believed in you before? Who can be fair in the moment where nobody else wants to be fair? So when Denny Green had all those things going for him, and again, great man, great coach, and he definitely, probably shouldn't have went out, at that time. And the feelings kind of maybe could have been mutual. I don't know.
Yeah.
But when you're there, we know how it is. When you're there for that long, was it 9, 10 years? You know, that's a long time to be in the coaching profession at one coach. Right. So it's like that's it might have been just time. You
know? Yeah, but he made the playoffs in 8 of those seasons. So
right.
It's just,
right.
I think Denny, it came down to he became a casualty of expectations. Like
absolutely.
After the 98 season, you guys carried those expectations into 99 and 2000. Mm-hmm. And when you never got back there, and then obviously the 2000 debacle and then the NFC Championship. But mm-hmm. when you never quite got there, it becomes a casualty of expectations. You know, if you guys were seen as a team that's barely supposed to make the playoffs and he's taking you to NFC championships, then he's keeping his job and everybody's praising him. But that just wasn't mm-hmm. the case that in that period of time for the Vikings.
Well, and again, that's the issue really with the whole industry, if you will, with the with coaches in general. Oh, we'll just hire somebody else and go to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
It's not that easy. Obviously, you know, they haven't went, you know, at all since, you know, since Denny has left. But at the same time, it's not like Denny was trying to not go to the Super Bowl. It's just hard to do. And again, things have to line up and rosters have to line up. Money has to line up. And then, of course, you get into a couple years like, okay, yeah, it's not a rebuilding year. But in 9 years, I guarantee outside looking in, out of those 9 years, there were 2 or 3 years people like, oh, they're just rebuilding this year. And Denny was still taking them to the playoffs. So, you know, they just, oh, let me finally get to the playoffs. Now all of a sudden I want to go to the Super Bowl. Like, wait, 6 months ago, you didn't think we were going to be 6-10, you know?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden you want to go to the Super Bowl. So, you know, that's just part of football. I'm sure, you know, Denny didn't have a problem with it. And again, it's the owners versus administration versus players. Like everybody knows the business side of football, and that's just it.
Right. And obviously we want to talk about more than just the 1998 season, but I would be upset with myself if I didn't ask you. Because you are the perfect person to ask this question, because you were there right before Randy came in, and then mm-hmm. he came in his rookie season, he blew up, and then you were there through most of the best seasons with him, mm-hmm. and with that core of great wide receivers. So what was it like being a teammate of Chris Carter? You have Chris Carter, who is the veteran, the guy who has been there, done it all. You have the mm-hmm. greatest rookie wide receiver of all time. And then in 98, some would call Jake Reed one of the best mm-hmm. third options of all time. What was it like
Absolutely.
Learning from them and just being, what were they like as teammates?
I think, well, of course, I think the first person that doesn't get enough credit is Jake Reed. You know, again, he had, I think, 3,000-yard, receiving years back-to-back-to-back and never got to the Pro Bowl, because at the time, you know, there was Rice and Carter and Irvin. They were going to make the Pro Bowl just off of name alone, and then they only had one more spot left. And so, you know, I think he definitely had a great career, and I think from the 97 year, he definitely should have went. And then, of course, Moss comes in 98, and Jake gets hurt, you know, at the end of, like, probably, I think, 6 games left or whatever. But again, great, you know, Jake's a great dude. You know, Randy's still one of my best friends till nowadays. And I go, you know, it wasn't so much of Chris leading the way, saying, hey, rookie, follow me, you know, because Randy just didn't. He wasn't that type of guy. He's like, I got this. I can do enough well, even though I'm young, that I don't need to learn everything that you're doing, Chris. Because Chris and Randy, they're playing body types are not even alike. Like, you know, Randy was super fast, and Chris was super crafty in the slot. And so those things, like, they didn't translate to Randy's game. Randy's like, I'm going to do my thing just better than everybody else has ever did it. And that's kind of what Randy did. So I would say, again, Jake is probably, you know, closer to what Randy's body type was, downfield, stretch the field type of guy, make plays downfield. And I was probably closer to what Chris was doing, you know, in my personal opinion. So they all might disagree. But, you know, that's how I saw. But I just think that those years when, you know, you had 4, 6'3", 6'4", 200 plus pound receivers, and we were setting every record known to man, the NFL's never seen that. And from there, to me, I keep saying I'm going to do a documentary about it, but it changed the dynamic of football.
Yes, you know, because we need we're looking for another 10-part series.
We need it.
Right? If you look at everybody now, right, all the top dogs, you got Michael Thomas, Julio Jones, AJ Green. Like, you got to be a big, you don't have to be, but the majority of the time, they're big body receivers. And I remember, I think it was the 2000 draft where the Packers went out and drafted three corners in the draft because they knew they had to see Randy, you know, twice a year you had to get over the Vikings. And those were all big corners. And now what do you see? Big corners, small safeties, you know, because they had to match up with big receivers on the, you know, on the outside. So, I mean, the Calvin Johnsons of the world, like, those are just, you know, I think a tribute to what the 98 Vikings were doing, because once you saw 6'4 across the board, there wasn't too much you guys could do. It was like, you got a one good corner, maybe two. Like, the Chiefs had Dale Carter and James Hasty, but that means you still have a nickel guy like Mark McMillan on the inside, who was a 5'9 guy. You know, so it's like, you have to match up with somebody who's 6'3, 6'4. So,
right.
I just think it changed the dynamic of, you know, the receiver position in the NFL.
All right, there's no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partner, Bet Online. NASCAR is back, and Bet Online has hundreds of other games, events, and sports to get in on. You can still bet on simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC events 24/7, or you can participate in a $10,000 Madden Bracket Challenge, a March Madness-style NFL simulation tournament you can enter for free. And live right now on Bet Online's YouTube channel, you'll find an exclusive interview with ex-Chicago Bulls players Ron Harper, Horace Grant, Bill Cartwright, and Craig Hodges to discuss the Michael Jordan documentary on what they're calling the final dance. So visit betonline.ag and use the promo code BLUEWIRE, which is all one word, to receive your new welcome bonus and check out all the action. Bet Online, your online wagering solution.
Speaking of Carter and Moss and John Randall and some of your other teammates, I kind of want to get this maybe opinion of yours. You're on Twitter now, you know. How do you think some of the careers, you know, of those guys would be viewed differently if things like Twitter and Instagram were around, you know, when you were playing in the NFL?
Oh, man. Well, it's funny how you say that, because, you know, I'm like, you know, I have a podcast now with T.O. And, you know, Get Your Popcorn Ready podcast. Check us out. But me and T always say he would have been able to control his narrative. And I think the same with Randy. Like, Randy would have been able to control what people thought about him and gave him the real Randy instead of, well, media says this. Don't forget, Randy didn't talk to the media.
Yeah.
You know, that Randy, like, give you a one liner, like, I'm out, dog. You know,
he was the original Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah. Well, there you go. He did not stand there and take questions for 15 minutes. Yep. And that was what the media hated at the time, because you're supposed to stand here. We're trying to interview you. It's your fan base you want to talk to. Stand here and talk to us. You know, Randy didn't think like that.
Right.
So I think, you know, Randy would have been able to control his own narrative and talk to his own fan base. And I think for him, it would have helped a lot more from how they portrayed him as a selfish teammate, let's say, or whatever.
Right.
Like in the Johnny Randalls of the world, well, yeah, he would have made $10 million off the field easy. Because of the character and the outgoingness, and he would have probably been the guy to tweet 25 times a day and tweet in the huddle something, you know, something crazy. But I think they would have made a lot more money off the field, because that would have helped them in those type of ways, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, that the Randy Moss is that whole thing is absolutely intriguing. Now, I don't, as much as I would love to talk about all of this forever, right. You are now the most interesting person alive. You do movies, you do podcasts, you're ex NFL player, ex NFL Euro player. I was doing a bunch of research on your 1 year in NFL Europe, and the first thing that stuck out to me was your quarterback was Sean Hill. who we know very well here in Minnesota. Yeah. What was it like playing with Sean Hill and ripping up the NFL Europe? I believe you you finished the year with the most touchdowns, I think most receptions that season. So you had a big year.
Yeah, I set a bunch of records over there, and I was over there with a chip on my shoulder. I was pissed off. I was just mad at the world. I couldn't believe that coaches and general managers thought I still couldn't play. So, because I remember I had hurt my shoulder, separated my shoulder in Oakland. Yep. So I sat out the whole year. And then,
and let me just set the stage quick, just for anybody who, who isn't sure what timeline we're on right now. This is 2003. So you hurt your shoulder at the end of 2002. Mm-hmm. And now you, like you said, now you're on a mission to prove that you belong in the NFL.
Yeah. And they, I think my agent called, like, you know, you got a couple workouts coming up, and I was like, workouts, like, you know, at the time, why are they not signing me? Like, I hurt my shoulder. Well, they don't think you can run anymore. I'm like, what do you mean run? It was my shoulder. Like, my legs are fine. And, you know, he's like, instead of working out, why don't you just go over to NFL Europe? I'm like, I'm not going over no NFL Europe. You're like, you know, those are for first year guys and second year guys. And the reason I was mad, because when he told me, he's like, well, it's not really for that. It's just for people who haven't played extensively. They haven't started, like, you know, 16 games or 20 games. I'm like, and I was always behind, you know, Chris and Randy. So I hadn't started a lot of games at the time. I was playing a lot, right, but I hadn't started a lot of games. I didn't, you know, wasn't playing every play for 16 games. And what made me mad is I've told my agent, it's like, look, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to dominate. And they're going to say, oh, well, okay, I knew he was going to do that. And then if I go over there and I make one mistake, they're going to be like, see, I told you so. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go over there and not make one mistake. And that's kind of how I took it. And I was mad the whole time. If we get over there, because a lot of kids were like, they were 22, 23. I think I was 25, 26 at the time, coming from a mature locker room, if you will, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know, I'm about football. I'm over here to play ball. Gave myself a curfew at 9 o'clock because we had to wake up and get on the bus and go to practice in the morning. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the younger guys going out, I'm like, go right ahead. I could care less. I'm going to kill you tomorrow in practice, though, if you don't get your rest, you know? So, and again, I was over there for 10 weeks and again, dominated, did my thing. And it was the same exact conversation when I got back. Yeah, you were great. You dominated. I told you I was going to do that, but I was, you know, I was just mad because in my mind, if you put me on the field this year, I'm going to do the same thing. Yes. Right. If I go, you know, will the numbers be the same if I go against, you know, Dion and Del Carter every day? Probably not, but I don't see them every week. So I'm still going to dominate the dude in front of me. So to me, it was only, I only put up those numbers because I had the opportunity to put up those numbers, and I get back and I only put up the numbers that I had the opportunity to put up numbers. And when I went to Jacksonville, I was probably let's say 12th or 13th guy on the depth chart, you know, probably in camp type of body. End up still had a separated shoulder because I re-injured it when I was in Europe, actually. So I was really playing on one arm. And then 4 weeks, that's when Jimmy Smith got, he got suspended in preseason. So he was going to miss the first four games. So when I get back from NFL Europe, I go to Jacksonville. End up going from the 12, 13 guy on the depth chart to being a starter by week one. So I'm doing my thing. So 4 weeks go by, leading the team in every receiving category, receptions, catches, yards per catch, touchdowns, right? So week six. So then Jimmy starts. I don't start anymore. Jimmy starts the next two games, and we're 1-5 going into the bye week in Jacksonville. And I remember they were like, we're going to kind of start from scratch. We're 1-5. We suck. We know that, whatever. But to me, I don't care. I'm still approaching every practice and every game like it's the Super Bowl, whatever. And they're like, let's reevaluate and start, you know, start from film and just start over. So we all watching film that week. And I remember the receivers coach and coordinator, they're just like, you know, we want the numbers to be percentages. Like if we throw you the ball so many times as targets, you need to be around this number. And I remember Jimmy Smith had 26 targets in two games. He played games 5 and 6, 26 targets in two games. And he had, I think 12 catches. That's around 50%, a little bit less than 50%.
Yeah.
And they were just, this is great. This is great numbers. We, you know, we throw you ball at 50% target rate. Great, great. And I was like, that's not great to me, but man, whatever. So that's in two games. So I go back personally and look at my, you know, what's my percentages. And I had 24 targets, less targets, and 15 catches. And I still had more touchdowns, more yards, you know, more everything. Still leading the team in every receiving category. Week seven comes along. And I have never seen the NFL field ever since that.
Oh, no.
So, again, I don't know what to contribute it to. And I don't sit around and say, you know, woe is me. But at the same time, when the opportunities were there, I took advantage. That's why I can sleep good at night. And that's why I, you know, thank God every day he gave me the opportunity, because I made most of the opportunity that he gave me.
For sure.
And I just, for the moment, I'm just, I don't. Yeah, I can. There's so many. And me and T.O. talk about this all the time. Like, you got targeted 25 times a game. That's why you had 10 catches. I'm not impressed. Because how the Viking system was, it's like Moss would have 8 targets and he would have 6 catches. Like CeCe would have 8 targets with 6 catches. Like, we didn't get targeted a lot. And nowadays, all these players are getting targeted 18 and 20 and 22 times with 7 catches. I'm like, I'm not impressed.
Right.
I'm not impressed at all. But, you know, the game has changed, and you know, it is what it is. So, but, you know, I still love the game ball, but at the same time, it's different. And I know the difference between the two, and it's hard to say, yeah, that's dude balling.
Well, it goes to show too, just like how important it is. You know, they talk about all the time with quarterbacks and that are getting drafted, or, you know, young players in general. But it just shows how important it is that you get into a system that works for your style and you get a coach that believes in you from the beginning. Like, there is so much more in play. I mean, and then you think about things that fans don't even think about, you know, like, the moving to a new city and being around a whole bunch of new teammates. And there's just so much going on that it's just, when you think of all the variables, it's just not surprising that so many rookies come in and flop, or even on their second year, whatever the case is. It's just, everything has to kind of work out perfectly. And you had a good situation in Minnesota because you had so much in front of you. You guys had so much success, but part of that, you were behind probably the best wide receiver trio of all time. And so you didn't get that playing time early on, and it probably affected you later down the road.
Absolutely. It affected me later down the road. And again, I don't think I would trade it, you know, again, because I look at it as, I remember when I was a free agent. So I went to, I think visited Miami. Then I visited Kansas City. Then I visited the Jets. And the next day, I was supposed to go to New England. And I remember I went to the Jets, and I was like, I think I left the building. I think went back to my hotel, and my agent's like, they're trying to get the deal done tonight. I was like, oof. I'm like, but I go to New England tomorrow. I'm like, you want to do it tonight? We can finish it tonight. I'm like, finish it tonight. And I never went to New England. And then second game that year, the Jets, when I'm at the Jets, we play New England. And that's when Mo Lewis knocks out Drew Bledsoe, and in comes Tom Brady. Now, does that mean that I would have won 1, 2, 5, 20 rings and been Tom Brady's Edelman today? I don't know.
Right.
But I also know on the other edge of that sword is I could have went to New England and gotten a car wreck and died the next day.
Right.
So I don't look at it as, oh, I missed out this huge opportunity. No, I didn't. Like, it wasn't meant to be. God didn't have that for me. This is a different path for different people. And I'm fine with it. You know, you can sit back all day. Well, that would have been great. Yes, it would have been great. It'd be great if I go win the lottery tomorrow for $400 million, but I'm not going to, you know, if I don't, oh my gosh, woe is me, life is over. It's part of it, you know? And I think, the paths are interesting, just the way that happens to people. And I think I was just talking to, or I just saw on ESPN, the defensive end that signed with the Cowboys from Alvin Smith. You know, so I'm just watching ESPN. They're like, so Alvin Smith signed with the Cowboys, hasn't played since 2015. You know, how many sacks do you think he's going to get this year? And I'm like, you got to make the team.
Yeah. Right.
You're like, there's not one player on the Dallas Cowboys is saying, you know what, cut me so you can get him. There's not one player. Oh, every player got a family, got kids. I'm going to bust my. This kid hasn't played since 2015. I'm not going to let this dude in off the street and beat me out. So it's just like, you're right. Those, the fan base, they don't understand all the time, like, what's going into the thought process and the dire need of somebody willing to literally, you know, die and or, you know, get cut. I'd rather die. I'm going to die to make this football team. Like, that's the mentality that they're going into. So just because these guys come from free agents or come from a big school, and again, that's the attitude I had. If I could care less if they went to Florida State, Ohio State, Miami, Michigan. Like, I'm here now. We're equals. I got to cut your throat on this next play. Like, I have to. Like, that's my only choice. Else, I'm going to be gone tomorrow, and I'm not going to be gone tomorrow. That's not an option.
Right.
So,
I think it'd be naive of us to maybe not address the events going on in the world right now. And I keep seeing, you know, people writing stuff about, it's something, that's for sure. I keep seeing people writing about, you know, the Vikings should sign Colin Kaepernick, you know, right now, because, you know, he'd be able to be in that city and bring that city back together. Do you have any thoughts on that? Do you think just signing Colin Kaepernick would solve things?
No, I don't. That's not going to solve anything. Yeah. People who are saying that, I think they're missing the point. And again, the point isn't it's two total separate scenarios. We're talking about a football / talent / been off for 3 years scenario, right? And or starting the conversation regarding police brutality and racism. Like, those are two total separate instances, but we'll just bring this one and bringing this one over, and that answers everything, right? No, it doesn't. I mean, I hope they're having the conversation at least regarding that, but I think to it'd be idiotic to think that, yes, signing somebody to a contract, and don't forget, we're talking about quarterback. There's only one ball. There's only one starting quarterback. He doesn't come in and save the world. He doesn't even come in, and he probably won't move the meter when it comes to some people who are out there who are with police brutality or who are with the racist, right? What would move the needle? Patrick Mahomes taking the knee. Yep. What will move the needle? Dak Prescott taking a knee. What will move the needle? Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson. The top
Drew
10
Brees.
Quarterbacks, right, would be huge, right? But the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL right now, five of them are African-American descent.
Yep. Yep.
So if that'll move the needle, because now you're going to have – Mahomes has – he has the world at his fingertips right now.
Yeah, Lamar Jackson.
Lamar Jackson. But let's say Patrick, right? He's the darling. He's in a city, in a state that, you know, if those people who love him and he takes a knee, they will be torn. How are you going to boo Patrick Mahomes? Right? He just brought you a ring. You've been begging. He's the man. You got 25,000 jerseys. How are you going to boo him? And because all he's trying to do is bring awareness. So, again, that would move the needle. If those five did that, that would move the needle. But, again, I don't think the Colin Kaepernick thing would even move the needle right now. It would be great for him personally and have the conversation, but I don't think that moves the needle. Those five guys that are top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL right now on the biggest stage, that's what would move the needle.
Yeah, I don't think it's just one simple solution. There's a lot that – it has to happen for stuff to be fixed on and off the field.
Absolutely.
Sorry to end it on a somber note, but you already threw out your podcast.
Tell us a little bit more. Tell us a little bit more about what's your podcast with T.O. about? What are you guys doing? Yeah. I mean, it's got to get a little bit crazy.
I've been listening to it. You keep it in check.
Good.
You keep him in check.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's called Get Your Popcorn Ready Podcast. Again, we're on the Himalaya app, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast.
Yeah.
But we love to kind of banter with each other. You know, what friends do, you just kind of go back and forth, and you're never going to let him up you. And people are like, well, he's T.O. Like, I don't care. I was better than T.O. You know what I'm saying? But
oh boy.
So I just don't have nothing to prove it. And he does. He's got the jacket, and I don't even have a sweater. You feel me? So But, you know, we just like to have fun with it. And from our perspective, we wanted a platform for players and other celebrities to kind of talk about things without having the spotlight on them too bright. We want people to come on the show, be relaxed, and be able to talk about things that, again, what goes on in their life and things that they want to promote, things they want to do, things they are doing, and kind of where they come from. And I think a lot of course, a lot of that gets, you know, swept under the rug, especially in sports, because you, again, it's 16 games a year in football. You're seeing that guy for 16 games, and it's how many catches and how many yards, how many throws, how many this, how, right? But the person came from somewhere, right? They had hurdles to get over. They have a family. They got a lot of times they've had drama, you know, some things that went on in their life that you're like, wow, I did not know that, you know, he's sick and people pass away and they still show up for games and they still show up for camps and they still show up, you know, for their fans. So it's like, I want people to understand, again, there's more to it than that number on their jersey. It's a person under there. It's a real person with real feelings and real problems in this world. And again, I want that platform to be able to be used for celebrities and athletes to, like, hey, we're regular human beings, and sometimes we need help. Again, we're gonna be depressed at times. We're gonna be on top of the world at times. We're gonna have to get over a hurdle that you guys have no idea what we're going through right now, and we're on the field performing at our best to the best of our ability. And I think that just needs to be told.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. I think having that type of mentality, not just towards sports, but towards everything, especially right now. We talked about moving the needle a few minutes ago, but being able to have open and honest conversations about how everybody is feeling throughout this whole thing is half the battle, because no matter which side you're on right now, depending on what type of, what group of people you're sitting in, you don't know what you can say and what you can't say. And until that sort of thing stops, so that we can have honest conversation. Because like you just said, everybody comes from something different. 99% of people in the world aren't evil. They're going based off of what they grew up seeing, what they grew up in, what their personal situation was. That's what they grew up. So until we can sit down and talk about each other's experiences and how we got to where we are and how we get better from there, the needle is going to be difficult to move. And that's where I struggle with a lot of this is going on, is that no matter which side you're on, it's a lot of, I'm not listening to you because you're wrong. And until that stops and we can talk to each other about why we feel different ways, then the conversation is going to be hard to get going.
Absolutely. It's all about listening right now. Because if you're talking about social media, it's like, somebody says something and then they walk away from their Twitter, right? That's just that's the normal. That's what we have to get away from, because you're right. It's not a one-sided road, right? We got to, if you say something, you have to be willing to listen. And if you're willing to listen, I think that's where it starts. Yeah,
I'm sure Drew Brees didn't think he was going to get the firestorm that he got today when he had that interview.
So. Absolutely. And again, you're in a locker room with these guys, because everybody thinks, oh, they're best friends. Like, not everybody's best friends, and everybody, they do respect each other. But as you can see, they probably have never had this talk, which is great, because now they'll have to have the talk. Unfortunately, we're going to, you know, condemn them throughout this process, and we're not going to know when they have the talk. They could be talking right now. They might talk when they see each other at camp. Who knows? But now you have to deal with backlash from, you know, just a bunch of dummies who don't know either side of it and don't want another 20 to get on the timeline and act a fool. But again, I think that it's great in the long run, because they will have the discussion.
Yep. Well, as people who root for the Vikings, it's really hard to watch, you know, the Saints crumble from the inside. So definitely difficult. But once again, your podcast is Get Your Popcorn Ready with T.O., make sure to go check that out. And you're on Twitter, right? What's your handle?
Yep. So my Twitter handle is Hatch89, and my Instagram is Matthew Hatchett. So I just got on Instagram about it like 6 months ago. So follow me on Instagram. I'm having fun with them, trying to find different pictures and different things to do. So, but I'm having a good time with it.
Oh man. All right. Well, thank you very much again for joining us. It was great talking.
Yeah,
to
I had
you.
A great time.
And
all right, good man. Thanks guys. I appreciate it, man. Yeah. Anytime. Let me know.
Good luck with everything for sure.
All right, thanks guys. Take care.
Hey, this is Megan Rapinoe, and I'm Sue Bird. We've decided to turn our crazy IG live show into a podcast for your listening pleasure. Enjoy the show. A Touch More.
New episodes of A Touch More drop Tuesday only on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.